Hello and welcome to this week's Revisiting Old Favourites, where we continue our marathon, trek, walk, hike, what is correct, pilgrimage across Europe with Hilaire Belloc as we continue to read The Path to Rome. You know, and something I've just noticed, I assumed that we would get to Rome much before Belloc, in the sense that he set himself the goal of arriving in Rome in time for the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul, June the 29th, and I assume we'd be there much before then, but you know, I noticed seeing we're now on page 321, but there are actually 448 pages, we still have 120 plus pages to go, and I'm beginning, like Belloc now, this is becoming exciting because we are racing against the clock, racing against the calendar. At any rate, will we actually get to, well, racing with Belloc, will we actually get to Rome by June the 29th in our time in 2021? I suppose when Belloc got there was 1900 or 101. So, without any further ado, we will continue with The Path to Rome by Hilaire Belloc. Here then, next day, just outside a town called Borgo, past the middle of morning, the rain ceased. Its effect was still upon the slippery and shining road, the sky was still fast and leaden, when, in a distaste for their towns, I skirted the place by a lane that runs westward of the houses, and sitting upon a low wall, I looked up at the Apennines, which were now plain above me, and thought over my approaching passage through those hills. But here I must make clear by a map the mass of mountains which I was about to attempt, and in which I forded so many rivers, met so many strange men and beasts, saw such unaccountable sights, was imprisoned, starved, frozen, haunted, delighted, burnt up, and finally refreshed in Tuscany, in a word, where I had the most extraordinary and unheard of adventures that ever diversified the life of man. The straight line to Rome runs from Milan not quite through Piacenza, but within a mile or two of that city. Then it runs across the first folds of the Apennines and gradually diverges from the Emilian Way. It was not possible to follow this part of the line exactly, for there was no kind of track. But by following the Emilian Way for several miles, as I had done, and by leaving it at the right moment, it was possible to strike the straight line again near a village called Medesano. Now, on the far side of the Apennines, beyond their main crest, there happens, most providentially, to be a river called the Serchio, whose valley is fairly straight and points down directly to Rome. To follow this valley would be practically to follow the line to Rome, and it struck the Tuscan plain not far from Lucca. But to get from the Emilian Way over the eastern slope of the Apennines' main ridge and crest to where the Serchio rises on the western side is a very difficult matter. The few roads across the Apennines cut my track at right angles and were therefore useless. In order to strike the watershed at the sources of the Serchio, it was necessary to go obliquely across a torrent and four rivers, the Taro, the Parma, the Enza, and the Serchio, and to climb the four spurs that divided them, crossing each nearer to the principal chain as I advanced until, after the Serchio, the next climb would be that of the central crest itself, on the far side of which I should find the Serchio Valley. Perhaps in places roads might correspond to this track. Certainly the bulk of it would be mule paths or rough gullies, how much I could not tell. The only way I could work it with my wretched map was to note the names of towns or hamlets more or less on the line, and to pick my way from one to another. I wrote them down as follows. Fornovo, Calestano, Tizzano, Colagna, the last at the foot of the final pass. The distance to that pass, as the crow flies, was only a little more than 30 miles. So exceedingly difficult was the task that it took me over 2 days, till I reached Fornovo beyond the Taro. I was not really in the hills. By country roads, picking my way, I made that afternoon for Medesano. The lanes were tortuous. They crossed continual streams that ran from the hills above, full and foaming after the rain, and frothing with the waste of the mountains. I had not gone 2 miles when the sky broke, not 4 when a new warmth began to steal over the air and a sense of summer to appear in the earth about me. With the greatest rapidity, the unusual weather that had accompanied me from Milan was changing into the normal brilliancy of the south. But it was too late for the sun to tell, though he shone from time to time through the clouds that were now moving eastwards more perceptibly and shredding as they moved. Quite tired and desiring food, keen also for rest after those dispiriting days, I stopped, before reaching Medesano, at an inn where 3 ways met, and there I purposed to eat and spend the night, for the next day, it was easy to see, would be tropical, and I should rise before dawn if I was to save the heat. I entered. The room within was of red wood. It had 2 tables, a little counter with a vast array of bottles, a woman behind the counter, and a small, nervous man in a strange hat serving. And all the little place was filled and crammed with a crowd of perhaps 20 men, gesticulating, shouting, laughing, quarrelling, and one very big man was explaining to another the virtues of his knife, and all were already amply satisfied with wine. For in this part men do not own, but are paid wages, so that they waste the little they have. I saluted the company, and walking up to the counter was about to call for wine. They had all become silent, when one man asked me a question in Italian. I did not understand it, and attempted to say so, when another asked the same question, then 6 or 7, and there was a hubbub. And out of the hubbub I heard a similar sentence rising all the time. To this day I do not know what it meant, but I thought and think it meant, "He is a Venetian," or "He is the Venetian." Something in my broken language had made them think this, and evidently the Venetians, or a Venetian, were, or was, gravely unpopular here. Why, I cannot tell. Perhaps the Venetians were blacklegs. But evidently a Venetian, or the whole Venetian nation, had recently done them a wrong. At any rate, one very dark-haired man put his face close up to mine, unlipped his teeth, and began a great noise of cursing and threatening, and this so angered me that it overmastered my fear, which had till then been considerable. I remembered also a rule which a wise man once told me for guidance, and it is this: God disposes of victory, but as the world is made, when men smile, smile. When men laugh, laugh. When men hit, hit. When men shout, shout. And when men curse, curse you also, my son, and in doubt let them always take the first move. I say my fear had been considerable, especially of the man with the knife, but I got too angry to remember it, and advancing my face also to this insulter's, I shouted, "Dio ladro, Dios di mi alma, sanguinamento, nombre di Dios, che vuole? Non sono de Venezia, io, sono de Francia. Je m'en fiche da vestra Venezia. Non se vede che non parla vestra lingua, che sono forestiere," and so forth. At this, they evidently divided into two parties, and all began raging amongst themselves, and some at me, while the others argued louder and louder that there was an error. The little innkeeper caught my arm over the counter, and I turned round sharply, thinking he was doing me wrong, but I saw him nodding and winking at me, and he was on my side. This was probably because he was responsible if anything happened, and he alone could not fly from the police. He made them a speech which, for all I know, may have been to the effect that he had known and loved me from childhood, or may have been that he knew me for one Jacques of Turin, or may have been any other lie. Whatever lie it was, it appeased them. Their anger went down to a murmur, just like soda water settling down into a glass. I stood wine. We drank. I showed them my book, and as my pencil needed sharpening, the large man lent me his knife for courtesy. When I got it in my hand, I saw plainly that it was no knife for stabbing with. It was a pruning knife, and would have bit the hand that cherished it, as they say of serpents. On the other hand, it would have been a good knife for ripping, and passable at a slash. You must not expect too much of one article. I took food, but I saw that in this parish it was safer to sleep out of doors than in, so in the falling evening, but not yet sunset, I wandered on, not at a pace, but looking for shelter, and I found at last just what I wanted. A little shed, with dried ferns, as it seemed, strewed in a corner, a few old sacks, and a broken piece of machinery, though this last was of no use to me. I thought, it will be safe here, for I shall rise before day, and the owner, if there is one, will not disturb me. The air was fairly warm, the place quite dry, the open side looked westward and a little south. The sun had now set behind the Apennines, and there was a deep effulgence in the sky. I drank a little wine, lit a pipe, and watched the west in silence. Whatever was left of the great pool from which all that rain had fallen now was banked up on the further side of heaven in toppling great clouds that caught the full glow of evening. The great clouds stood up in heaven, separate, like persons, and no wind blew, but everything was full of evening. I worship them so far as it is permitted to worship inanimate things. They domed into the pure light of the higher air, inviolable. They seemed halted in the presence of a commanding majesty who ranked them all in order. This vision filled me with a large calm which a travelled man may find on coming to his home, or a learner in the communion of wise men. Repose, certitude, and, as it were, a premonition of glory occupied my spirit. Before it was yet quite dark, I had made a bed out of the dry bracken, covered myself with the sacks and cloths, and very soon I fell asleep, and thinking of the shapes of clouds and of the power of God. Thanks so much for joining me on The Path to Rome with Hilaire Belloc. Join me again next week as we continue in our pilgrimage to Rome with the great Frenchman, or Anglo-Frenchman, or man of Sussex, a great favourite of mine anyway, Old Thunder himself, Hilaire Belloc. Thank you for joining me on this pilgrimage. Until then, until next time. Goodbye and God bless.